Welcome back, true believers. Our marvelous Marvel marathon continues, and today is it's the big one, I guess. This is like one of the milestone, I'd say, for Marvel Studios, and all Phase One lead up to this moment does, of course, 2012's The Avengers, directed by Joss Whedon. As usual, I'm James Reinhardt,
Chris Govel,
Chuck Phillips,
Justin Morgan, and we have a very special guest.
Hey, you call your fans true believers?
It's a reference to Stan Lee.
Aww.
We discussed it in the last episode, because I was thinking it was X-Files. I don't fucking know what James is doing.
I thought so, too. I was like, people want people to believe in you.
I was thinking that's nice. Jones. I'll explain it again, but Stan Lee, like, anytime he'd write an editorial in, like, Marvel Comics, or anytime, like, he'd introduce himself to your fans as true believers. And, like, so, like, in comic books, if he'd write an editorial, it'd be like, hey, true believer. Or, like, a lot of times when he'd narrate cartoons, because he'd narrate a lot of cultish cartoons. He would say, he'd be like, welcome, true believers, here's another episode of Spider-Man.
That's like a cult leader thing.
Yeah, that's what Chris just said.
He is a cult leader.
Yeah, that's super weird.
Yeah, well, what? I thought it would be fun to homage Stan Lee with this Marvel marathon by doing that.
Cool.
I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Now, out of all the movies that came out leading up to this, I maybe still think that Iron Man is maybe the best because it's the most different. Mm-hmm. But I think that Joss Whedon does a really good job of combining all these characters together for once.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Iron Man is probably the best. And, you know, I think if there's one thing we agree on is that Phase 1 seemed to have lots of ups and downs. But Joss Whedon somehow created a... And at the time, that was a big question, is whether or not we could do this movie that balanced all these superheroes together. And I think he did it. I think he did it very well.
He's really good coming off of like his shows like Firefly,
Buffy,
and Buffy, where he's got these scenes. He's got these scenes.
Freya disagrees.
That people kind of get their personality in quickly. It could be a large scene with several characters, and they all kind of have this individualism.
Yeah, and but also too, like he really well, he does a good job of kind of giving each character a reason to be there. It's not just like, oh, hey, here's this other character who's going to show up and just kind of stand around. And like every character has a motivation for wanting to be there, wanting to get this thing. You know, the MacGuffin is the Tesseract, obviously.
Which you could say the same thing for the ending of Buffy. You know, he does basically the same exact thing for season 4. He does it for season 6. Basically, every character in there gets their own high point. Mm-hmm. You know. And I think he does it. I think that's one thing he does well is collaboration.
Yeah.
He kind of starts in an interesting place with these smaller characters because these are the people that haven't had their own movies. They've been cameoed at best. Hawkeye, you really don't have anything from him besides he made a couple jokes while aiming his bow and arrow at Thor.
Mm. Yeah.
We're gaining more about Black Widow. Actually, Black Widow is probably maybe one of the more in-depth characters for what you're learning about throughout this movie. I thought you learn pretty quickly that she's in control of her situation at all times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say
I definitely get that until later in the movie when she sees the Hulk in his glory, as it were. I think that's the moment she kind of loses control.
And practically pisses herself.
Yeah, but it does set up the love story very nicely. Mm-hmm.
I do like, in hindsight, too, how they kind of make it seem like, oh, her love interest in the front is Hawkeye, and you realize that it's more of a camaraderie between the two people.
Like a mentor-student relationship.
I definitely never saw it as, like, a romantic thing. I always saw it as a... comrades in arms,
kind of like
thing.
A sibling thing.
Yeah. But like watching this again, seeing her evolution with Banner's character, I think really it set it up really naturally. And if I feel like if you didn't see it coming, then you weren't watching the same movie. Because at first she's very in control, except for when he like you know, she's definitely seen the footage, so she definitely knows she should be afraid. But it's not until she actually sees it that she is afraid. But, you know, she also sees him as human. She thinks he's a good person.
Well, she's usually really prepared, too, because she's the first person that goes out to make contact with the Hulk.
Yeah.
And she's clearly has, like, a small army with her in case things go wrong. When she ends up facing the Hulk she's a little underprepared for it because, I mean, at the very moment that he's transforming, her leg's kind of stuck. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little bit fucked in her situation. She's out of her element. She knows it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing on that continuity, though, that kind of bothered me is that the moment that he shows up for the final battle, nobody even questions now if he's on their side or not. I thought was kind of... I mean, I think it would have taken away if they had addressed it, but it is kind of unnatural that they're suddenly like, this guy, like, kind of tried to kill us a couple hours ago.
But it wasn't Bruce Banner. It was the Hulk.
Yeah, but when he Hulks out, he has that really cool moment where he punches
He was kind of under the influence of Loki at that point.
I didn't think he was. I think that Loki just made a situation that...
That
enraged him past his control.
Yeah.
Well, here's my only... The only reason I don't really see that too much is they make references to the Incredible Hulk, that he's learning to control his ability.
Mm-hmm.
You have Tony Stark messing around with him. Then at the end of the movie, when he comes back, he's clearly in control of the Hulk to the point that he's helping the heroes and fighting against them.
It's actually a big reveal moment when he says, "I'm always angry."
Always angry, yeah, and he transforms.
Yeah,
But the scene where he transforms, and he's angry and he's fighting Black Widow or chasing her down. That's when he uncontrollably grabbed the staff, and actually a really kind of clever scene where everybody's making fun of each other. I want to say making fun of because it doesn't sound this intense. But everybody's jabs at everybody are super personal and actually really kind of clever.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a scene that I'd recommend maybe watching more than once. Like, literally just go back and watch it again because they're so quick to insult each other.
That is also, again, the magic in Joss Whedon.
But that's a great scene where he's holding the staff and they're just like, you might want to put that down.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like, this is the moment, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but this is the moment where they build distrust in the heroes, and it's kind of a clever way that they do it, because instead of, it goes back to Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods, the chemical took over.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're affected by this aura in the room that they can't see, so they're like temporarily kind of against each other, just in the heat of the moment, so.
Yeah.
I can see that. I formulated this theory actually while watching this again because I've seen the Avengers probably 100 times at this point. I went to the theater. I was so excited, smiled the entire movie like an idiot. And every time I've watched it, I realized something new. And this time, the thing was that I think that now that we've seen all the way through, up to Infinity War and definitively Ragnarok, the Hulk matures at a normal rate, but compared to Bruce Banner, it's not what we see. So in the beginning, he's a baby, sensory overload, you know, just throws a tantrum, doesn't know what's going on. He's able to kind of aim it in the battle, and he's able to form, like, one word. And then in the Avengers, we see a little bit, not a development so much of the Hulk when he's Hulked out, just Banner being able to adjust to the transformation, I would say. Whereas the Hulk, he's still kind of angry, but he's still a little more aimed. We definitely see that in the helicarrier battle, where he's fighting Thor. And then he gets even a little bit more mature in the final battle with the Avengers. Now we see he's fighting along with the Avengers in Avengers 2. He develops some sort of relationship with Natasha. And then finally, when he becomes the Hulk for a long period of time, we see in Ragnarok, he matures. He can speak in full, you know. He can have, like, more articulate, higher reasoning. The end before, he realizes that he's a separate being. It was something that I didn't really notice before until I put all the pieces together. The Hulk is maturing at a different rate throughout the...
Gamma rate.
Well, yeah.
But do you also think it's because in Ragnarok, he's not really around Earth? So he's out of his element more.
I think he's able to mature faster because less people are terrified of him.
Yeah.
I think that Earth was probably the worst place for him to mature because he was always going to be shot at or put in a cage or forced to be Bruce Banner forever.
Yeah.
Whereas then he was put in a place where people worshipped him. They were like, this is great.
That's
I mean, we're not
going to
talk about the Ragnarok, but like...
Well, romance kind of works. Not so much in this movie. Maybe this is the budding part of it. But yeah. With Black Widow, because she kind of knows what he is, accepts him for what he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And she accepts the Hulk, too, as a separate being than Bruce Banner.
Well, I think...
Which is interesting.
I think Joss Whedon, too, he really does a good job of all, of handling all these smaller characters. Coulson maybe didn't really stand out until Thor 2, to me. Mm-hmm. Thor 2, sorry. Thor. The original Thor movie. And... But, like, I really want to say she's a great character, too, but I can just remember Colby Smothers. I can't remember
her name.
Colby Smothers.
I also did notice that all the top agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are women.
Yes.
And yeah. I thought that was really cool. Black Widow, Agent May, and Maria Hill. And they always reference each other, and I was like, that's kind of cool that all the best agents are women.
Yeah, and I will say about this, you brought up, like, the smaller characters like Coulson or even Fury. We only seen, like, little bits of Fury. This is kind of, like, his moment mm-hmm. to shine. Yep. So we get to know more about those characters in Hawkeye and Black Widow. But I'd say almost every character kind of broke out with this, even though, I mean, Iron Man was, people loved before this. But I would say all the other, like, Captain America and Thor, you know, Hulk, Black Widow, I brought up earlier, Loki even, because, you know, I brought up in our Thor episode that I liked Loki a lot in Thor, but he wasn't the Loki that everyone fell in love with. Yeah. This is the Loki that America...
This is the Loki that the teenage girls lost their minds.
Hey,
It was that suit when he was in a real suit.
I have gifs of that scene. That with the flip of the cane where he, like, hits the guy. And I was like, it's so cool. And also you find out that he improvised that. Where he flips it. I was like, that's so cool.
Are you talking about the staff?
Yeah.
Where he turns I had like a Dumb and Dumber fought with the canes.
Well, he turns it into like a cane for the purpose of the party.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does this like kind of like cute little move where he's like really showing off. And he like, when he pins the guy down, he's like going to get his eye. He like looks up for a second. He has this like kind of mischievous like look on his face.
Even I was swooning.
Well, I always thought that was like a weird moment, but I realized that it's the first time in Loki's life that people are actually afraid of him.
Actually, no one really takes him seriously. Moment that's really great is that guy that stands up to him that's just a nobody.
I thought it should have been Stan Lee, but
I feel like Stan Lee would have taken away from it. Like,
Yeah, that's what I say. It would have been far less powerful if it was Stan Lee, but the fact that it's...
It would have changed the tone, too.
Yeah, it's a guy who's clearly seen the rise of Hitler, and that's what this scene is.
And then it's in Germany.
But yeah, back to my original point, like, all of these heroes who we'd kind of seen before in multiple movies in some cases, this is a movie where they all seem to break out with audiences where... People started to love the character of Thor, the character of Captain America. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, oh, we love Iron Man. Now, all of a sudden, like, people seem to fall. This was a movie that made people fall in love with the Marvel characters and the Marvel brand.
Their stories have to be tighter, too, because realistically, even though the movie's long, like 2.5 hours, mm-hmm. each character pretty much only has a 15-minute story, in there to themselves. Yep. And I think they do a good job of pointing out their problems and what they need to fix. If it's not necessarily in this film... Things are set up in this film that, like, carry through to the next ones.
Yeah.
I thought they were very smart about keeping the story focused on kind of the A-plot, which is something I've said is a detriment to other movies. But in this one, especially with the team-up movie, you kind of need to keep it focused. I think he was smart to bring in a MacGuffin. It was just natural. And I think that I remember in 2008 when I found out that they were going to do an Avengers, like... All I talked about every Marvel movie is, I can't wait to see what the Avengers is like. I can't wait to see what it's like. Oh my God, they're doing an Avengers. Like, what's going to happen? And it was so exciting. And the fact that this movie, for the first time ever in my whole life, has lived up to the hype. I saw that movie expecting the greatest movie ever, and I walked out being that was the greatest movie ever.
And the tone's really fun after, like,
but
Dark Knight and stuff. Like,
it was lighthearted. It was funny. I laughed the whole movie. I smiled like an idiot. It's actually funny now. This is like my 100th viewing, and now I'm being a little nitpicky.
Well, I like about like Captain America, or like, did you dress yourself? Like the little comments that they make.
That I like the.
That's Tony's character, though.
Yeah, Tony's.
That's what he's supposed to do.
Tony's a character that was written for Joss Whedon, because he just, you know, he loves the witty quips.
I feel like if you didn't have that character, you would have to point that out in some manner.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sure. That you have to. point out the things. If you're writing the script, like, why the fuck is this guy wearing this suit in this time? Mm-hmm.
You don't think that that was something that was planned out? Like, he's going to wear this goofy suit so that Tony can make this comment?
No, I'm talking more from the perspective of he's in this new world.
Oh, yeah.
And if these random people, like, they actually do a really good scene with Captain America where he jumps out on top of this, like, bus, and he starts commanding these cops around, and they're looking at him like he's a fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. And then he fights off these two pointless aliens, and the guy just turns around and just starts giving the exact same commands. It's one of the funniest moments, and it also kind of shows how, like, it kind of reminded me a little bit of maybe something like the beginning of a Watchmen would be, where, like, there's people in suits that are vigilantes, and you can't take these guys serious. Mm-hmm. So when he jumps down on that bus, he comes off almost like a crazy person. Like, he's wearing a weird suit, and he's bossing the cops around.
Yeah. For me, like, there's that line where he goes, like, oh, aren't the Stars and Stripes a little old-fashioned? And Coulson's like, I think today, like, people need a little old-fashioned. And it kind of summarizes how this movie is received, where that summer, the two most anticipated movies were this and A Dark Knight Rises. Those were all, like, the comic book fans.
One was good.
Yeah, one was bad. One was okay, you know. I didn't hate Dark Knight Rises, but...
Me neither.
But there was definitely, like, a changing of the paradigm that I don't think people are ready for, where, like, audiences flocked this movie, audiences loved this movie. In Dark Knight Rises, people went and saw, and they, like... You know, like, mixed reactions. Like, you know, Chris and I saying we didn't hate it. Lexi, you know...
That movie was ruined because I watched Birdemic.
I also feel like, no offense to the franchise, but Batman Begins, really good. Mm-hmm. Dark Knight, way better. So everyone's expectations are really, really high. Yeah. And I think for the Avengers, he had more time. He could be more fun with it because I personally feel like they didn't really... I feel like Thor and Captain America were more kind of like fluff pieces to have out there before the new one.
It was to build up.
There wasn't Avengers. Yeah, there was, except for the first Iron Man, which was like your first like bang, and then it kind of simmered for a little while. I personally really liked Thor.
It was probably my favorite of Phase 1 other than Iron Man. I think a little bit more.
I love Loki the Disney Prince, but
I like the line in this where they're talking about Loki, and he's like, that's my brother you're talking about. And they're like, he killed 14 people. He's he's adopted.
But I think the biggest thing is you have this overarching story arc, but at the same time, they're building on it. This is the payoff. This is where everything culminates. It's like, okay, you guys stuck with us through Captain America and Iron Man 2. This is your reward.
This is what you wanted, yeah.
That's the brilliance of these Marvel movies. What I don't think people see is, like, the Star Wars movies are telling a big story over three movies. It's, you know, first act, middle act, third act. Mm-hmm. And these movies are doing them, but just really fucking big, where Phase 1 is the first act of this huge story. This is, like, the end of Act 1. And then we get to Act 2.
It's still the beginning of Act 2 as well. They still set up for...
All these movies kind of have a subgenre, and then when they come together, they have to find some new way to mix them together. Mm-hmm. And this kind of went more for comedy than anything else. There's some serious moments, but...
I think it was a lighthearted action, bit of a romp.
I wouldn't actually call it comedy. I'd call it action.
Yeah, I would say more of an action team.
Yeah. With tones of comedy.
I'd say this is the first movie that you could say is just straight superhero.
Yeah.
Like, as its own genre.
Yeah, and that's why...
It doesn't have a subgenre like a lot of the other ones do.
And that's why, when I did my countdown of favorite comic book movies, this is number two, because, like, this really, I think for me, has been the first time I felt like I was watching a comic book.
I would say, if anything, an ensemble movie, which doesn't sound fair, but it mixes all these characters really, really well. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking of a movie off the top of my head, I think, like, The Big Chill or Breakfast Club, where you're balancing a bunch of characters... I think that's
almost fire, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what the closest this is to.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, this is where this is what it has to work
with. Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, but this movie succeeded a lot in developing the relationships, too, between individual characters. So we see, you know, Iron Man, Banner. Mm-hmm. You see that they have a great, like, kind of budding friendship. We see Thor and Loki is developing a relationship with his brother, saying, hey, we mourned, like, we missed you, like, you know, and he actually, like, tries to reach out to him. We see you know, Coulson, Captain America, Black Widow, Hawkeye. Like, we see all these little interpersonal relationships and how they all react to each other.
But they all interchange, too. That's, that's some of the magic that's there.
Yeah, and I think that Whedon did a really good job of focusing on the character relationships more than just the plot. The plot was, in this movie, almost secondary because it's so kind of basic. It's Jason McGovern.
It moves
Seven
really
Samurai-ish
fast.
Sort of. Yeah, mm-hmm. sort of
movie. It's like 40 minutes in, Loki, who's stole the Tesseract and took over minds, is already imprisoned. Like, he's already captured in, like, 40 minutes time.
Yeah.
And then you
yeah.
get the Avengers together before, like, this grand kind of, I don't know if it's grand, but his escape.
Yeah. It wasn't also until this movie that I really subscribed to Loki playing the long, long game.
Mm-hmm.
Of trying to get back to Asgard and rule. Because you see that his heart's never in it. But they're like, oh, well, you know, you'll have the Earth, but we're going to have the universe. I'm like, no one's going to take that deal. Oh, wait, Loki does because he doesn't care.
I like the scene where you first see Loki talking to the mysterious person, and you have that, like, kind of Jaws in the water moment where, like, in the back, you kind of see the subtle creature that's going to
be. Yeah,
the
Leviathan, yeah. Yeah, they definitely did a good job of, you know, world building that way. And like I said, showing that Loki's, I think, playing the long game. He plans to get captured. He definitely plans to lose this fight.
I know I was telling Justin before, I was like, man, they set up Thanos in this movie, and I was like, no one takes Thanos very seriously.
That's,
I was like, Loki's like, this is my army, I'll do whatever I want with
that's,
him. Like,
Loki's kind of playing him like a fool, too. He's just using him for an end.
Like, man,
but
that's
the one that's playing the long game,
Thanos,
to be fair, is Thanos, yeah.
I would definitely say so.
I think the only thing that I would say was a little disappointing was the bad guys, like the army, the actual army when it actually showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But the fun part is the camaraderie between them. Like, it's really fun to watch them fight together and work together. That one shot that's like that faux long shot where it just keeps going between all the characters.
Yeah.
But
really
to be
fun.
Fair, they have to be disposable villains.
Yeah.
They have
to
be.
And that's what I brought with her, because we are watching, there's a really interesting video on YouTube on how to craft a, like, really good action scene. They talk about, like,
reversals
and stuff like that, and she's brought, there's none of that.
There's no reversals in the final battle scene at all. It's all, look how awesome these heroes are. And I was also thought to myself, I was like, you know, I've never seen such a dialogue-focused action scene.
Yeah, and
where it's all these little witty quips is like, oh, well, Thor's taking a Squadron 6, and he didn't invite me. It's, you know, all those little cute little character moments
and
that are fine.
And James, he didn't have it in Thor, but in Avengers, Thor had lightning
all the time. Yeah,
yeah.
But I did,
consciously this time noticed the lack of reversals.
Yeah.
And I was actually a little disappointed.
But I think that's intentional, because this is, like, the payoff for, like, all these movies build up to this payoff of, like, this awesome superhero team-up where you get
nothing but them kicking ass.
Yeah, yeah,
I just don't think it's a rewarding action scene.
You get all these great, like, fanboy moments that you've been waiting for.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay in this movie. My problem, which I'll get into when we get around this movie, but where Age of Ultron tried to recreate this instead of maybe trying to do an action scene where there's reversals and shit goes wrong. And
Avengers 2 definitely tried to recapture the flame
that
this movie had. And
most of them do. I mean, the sequel really tries.
I'm guilty, too, because when I saw Avengers 2, I was like, still high off my experience of seeing Avengers 1. And it's a really fond movie experience for me. Like I said, grinning like an idiot the whole time. Like,
that's okay.
It took me like 3 viewings to realize what Hulk says after he beats the shit out of Loki.
You know how happy I would be if I made a movie and somebody was just like, I was grinning the entire time?
Oh, yeah, like, grinning like an idiot. So, like, then I went into Avengers 2.
I mean, unless
they're like,
crazy.
My God. I was like, Avengers 2.
Really,
I was like,
movie.
Avengers 1 was so amazing. I'm going to love Avengers 2. I was convinced. And then I was like, it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it while I was there, but it didn't capture the same magic for me.
It has all these small moments that are really well thought out. Like, I love all of them. When Loki's taken over in the beginning, and Samuel Jackson's casually trying to leave.
I'll ever think about that. Or he's just stalling. Like,
yeah, Samuel L. Jackson again at the end of the movie with Powers Booth and the mysterious group.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. group.
The shadowy council.
Well, that moment's cool, too, because you don't know these people, but they're going to blow up, they're going to nuke New York, which kind of makes a...
That bothered me, that there was never a, like, the pilot's just like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't know why, I felt to myself, I was like, really, should
it
shouldn't there
kind
be
of,
more?
I know they have a lot of F-22s for some reason. I love F-22s. There's a lot of them in these movies. I'm surprised they don't have, like, drones of some sort.
Drones would have made sense.
Something
like
coming
the
in.
Like Iron Man 2 drones or something.
And I like how really fast that the F-22s go. F-22s can go, like, 250-some miles per hour. And he shoots the nuke, and he's like 2 minutes and 30 seconds till contact. I'm like, really? It's going to take that long?
You're like, that long? Well, we don't know how far
like, it should take. It should take like 10 seconds from where you're at. But, I really like that, you know, Iron Man gets, everyone gets their own. All these moments are great. But Iron Man's moment of being able to like
do
slightly boost
play.
That up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He makes it
and it changes. It also evolves his story arc.
It does, and it sets up for Iron Man 3 in a nice way.
Right, our next movie, Iron Man 3. Yeah. I think you really see maybe one of the best versions of Tony Stark.
Yeah,
I also thought he doesn't. He seems like the kind of character that would have like turned it up and then just let go. But he doesn't. He like follows it all the way through, which I guess is a good character moment.
I mean, he gets called on his personality. In the middle of the movie.
You're not the guy to lay down on the wire to make the sacrifice play. And he's like, well, I'll just cut the wire.
Yeah.
You can tell I've seen this movie a lot of times.
It felt like a movie where he didn't have to, like, as long as it was going in that
it was
general
going up,
direction.
Yeah, he could have just let it go.
I don't think he has to take it all the way up there.
To the moment where he gets, like,
you really want to take the chance, though, with a nuke to go off?
I have one question. Every time I watch this movie, maybe I miss it, but I never see them hand Captain America anything where he can contact... Iron Man, when they go to save the jets that are going down.
Yeah.
He's just automatically talking. Like, he's not even, like, holding his ear like, yes, Iron Man. He's just talking to Iron Man. I'm like, did he hook him up with something?
When they go to save the jets?
Yeah, when the jets are going down.
When the engines are going down. Yeah.
They all talk to each other.
They all split and they all have
heads. I assume that Caps was just in his costume.
I could have sworn
but he didn't have his helmet.
They showed something. I don't
know. No, they don't, yeah.
I don't think they do, but it never bothers me. How do they communicate? I'm like, magic. I don't care.
But I really like the dynamics of them because
Iron Man's
trying to fix the situation the best that he can by removing all this debris and stuff. And Captain America, even though he's strong, he's having kind of a difficult time up in the air fighting this, like, mercenary of some sort.
Random guy, yeah.
And I kind of like that everybody kind of gets paired off into something that's more their level to fight with. And my favorite fight is Loki and the Hulk. I mean, who doesn't... who does not enjoy watching that happen?
That had so much more payoff for me when I watched Ragnarok. And he sees the Hulk, he's like, I need to leave.
Yeah, you see him. You see his face is just like shook.
But it's a great character moment because they didn't have to bring it up again that he's like terrified of the Hulk.
Once again, we talk about how much people love these movies. In that moment, you see it opening night. The Hulk's his puny god.
Oh,
and you
no
said
one
it
knew.
Took you five times because people were laughing so hard opening night.
Yeah,
it's so funny. And then you don't appreciate the fact that like Loki like squeals. He's just like. Like, as he's laying on the ground.
And the Hulk smash thing where Captain America's giving everybody's...
Hulk smash.
He's leading everybody,
That's
what I mean, is Hulk doesn't really do anything except for just beat up on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, like, going with his maturity.
And we'll talk about it in other movies, but New York gets really fucking damaged.
Yeah.
There's gotta be people dying in New York.
Well,
this is the first one where they were, like, the next one after that was Batman versus Superman, where they're like, "Why?" Or Man of Steel, where they're just like, "Why is every movie just New York City or a stand-in for New York City just demolish the entire thing?"
Here's a big difference: the way that this movie ends, where the people are kind of talking about them, and they're not talking about them in like a good light, even though they kind of have the "we're proud of ourselves, we know what we did" thing. And in Man of Steel, they're, like, commending this guy And, like...
Put a statue up.
Right, right. Yeah. And the natural thing would be, like, how...
Is he going to pay for that?
Batman vs. Superman begins, where it's like, we should be afraid of this guy because of what he can do. So, I think that it's in the same movie, Avengers works much better than Man of Steel, where it's like, you wouldn't be commending this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Mixed emotions, where maybe you could have the end of the Boondock Saints, where like, I think he was a really great guy, because he saved half of the... no, fuck that guy. He destroyed half the city. Like, that's what
it meant. I will say, to the Avengers' credit, is they work it into the dialogue, where he's like, oh, you know, I want a perimeter back this... So it seems like they are keeping it pretty contained, or at least they make an effort to secure the perimeter.
Also, if you watch the Netflix shows, you know, a lot of the Marvel Netflix shows really address the fallout of this, where...
Especially
like
with Daredevil season one.
Yeah, in Daredevil, they address that crime is kind of like... Crime is kind of like profited off of this a lot. Yeah. Like, you know, Kingpin rises because this shit happens. And then, you know, we see in, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't know if anyone watches that, but...
Yeah.
There's lots of storylines in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where, like, people get a hold of, like, Chitaurian, like, technology.
Yeah, it's a lot of them as the alien tech, like, really causes a lot of problems.
Later in this, all these movies.
It doesn't always become the Chitauri weapons, but I mean, it's a lot of them. They also show that S.H.I.E.L.D. took precautions to try to get all of it.
We didn't talk, we're not really going to talk about them. We're talking about the actual features. But you remember for a while, I don't think it was starting with, maybe it was started with Avengers, but they did Marvel one-shot shorts, and they only did like five of them before they gave up on them.
Yeah.
But one of them, the one with Avengers, I think, or maybe it starts with, I think it has to be Avengers. I can't remember the actors' names, but it's just these low-level criminals that find one of those guns and start robbing
people with his vaporizer. Yeah, those one-shots were not good.
Some of them were fine.
I think the one with Ben Kingsley was very good.
That one was...
Where he's in jail.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that maybe post the next episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, that one has some spoilers. There's one with Coulson, though, where I think that one where they get the gun and he, like, bites them in the convenience store.
Yeah.
And I thought it was cute because he, like, he pulls moves that are definitely not Coulson and definitely are Captain America.
Yeah.
And it's, like, you know, kind of he's homaging his hero.
They're like, Pixar can make shorts. We can do it.
Coulson in this movie, I wish he'd stayed dead.
Yeah, he...
like, lessens the impact.
It kind of makes... The fact that you know he comes back. Yeah.
It doesn't even just lessen the impact. It kind of makes... Nick Fury more fucked up, because I mean, it wasn't just the cards, it's like he let this guy go on thinking that Coulson's dead, because Coulson dies as far as we know in this movie in a really good moment too.
In S.H.I.E.L.D. too, he does actually die, and they talk about it's even more fucked up when you find out the circumstances where they bring him back using the Kree or whatever, but
Kree alien.
They talk about how it was so hard to get him back to past the will to live. He had lost the will to leave, and he was like, please just let me die. And you're like, that's really fucked up, because when the speech he gives Fury, he's like, they need something to bring them together, and he's like, you see, he's content with his death. He's happy to die for the cause. He believes in what he's doing. And Fury goes, nah, you're not... He's like, I'm not letting you clock out. He says something to that effect.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm clocking out. And he's like, no, you're not.
That sounds like a Twilight Zone episode. Like, you're not allowed to die.
If you've seen Tahiti, you would totally understand.
Yeah, like, Coulson, it's so sad. And he says, I'm clocking out, boss. And he's just like, no, like, you're not allowed. I'm like,
yeah, denied.
He's really screwed up. But, like, he's like, no, you're going to keep... And then, because he keeps working for S.H.I.E.L.D.
But so that's why it's so great when you get to that part at the end of season one.
Yeah.
Where everything culminates and you get this whole other storyline going on.
And and I love that Coulson, of all the characters, pins Loki immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, and he even, I think, to a degree, catches on that he's playing a longer game. You lack conviction, you'll never win.
Yep. So, Marvel's Avengers, the TV show, aired after Avengers?
Obviously, it was after Avengers. It was the fall after summer.
And then the rumor the whole summer was, is Coulson going to come back? What are they going to do? We heard he was attached to it.
And then the very first teaser for it was Welcome to Level 7, and you see Phil Coulson.
And for all you know, in the teasers, it could be a prequel of some sort. Everyone knew it would be after, but then he starts doing the,
oh, it's a magical place, I was in Tahiti.
Tahiti.
And you start to suspect that something was awry.
One thing, Grant Ward, the one guy in it, they're interviewing him for this next mission, this next job. And that's how they introduce it. Well, didn't he die in the Battle of New York? And it's like, well, yes, but
I watched two episodes of that. I think that was in the pilot.
They answered it pretty definitively in the pilot, but they left the mystery of like what exactly happened
the whole season.
I mean,
find out that Fury's ring is
We're going through a ton of Marvel movies, and if you think about how much television there is too, there's a vast amount of Marvel. Yeah. If you really wanted to try to get caught up on something, it's almost to the point in the comics where it's like, you are never going to be able to stay caught up anymore.
Yeah, that's almost my attitude towards a lot of this now, where I'm like, there are titles I read and there are titles I don't. Like, I saw the reviews for Iron Fist and, like, the trailer didn't win me over, so I'm like, oh, I'm just not going to read this one.
It's interesting how they decided that they were going to just not care about the TV universe, because it is exactly the parallel of the comics. I was like, we don't give a shit about Daredevil comics, and then they got really good.
I'm trying to remember who's the showrunner of Daredevil. Because he does a really, really good job. And
you talking about who plays Kingpin? Or
who knows? The showrunner, the actual...
Oh,
isn't it? It's Drew Goddard, isn't it?
No, he was, but he left.
Okay, then.
But if we want to go to Marvel politics, the movie side of Marvel has been pretty open that they don't really care about the TV side.
Especially after Coulson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We haven't seen it yet because we're building up to it, and we're going to obviously see it at the end of this, Infinity War. I would really love for some reason, like, the Marvel TV people to be in it.
Oh, I would love it, too.
I think it'd be...
Like, Daredevil has, like, a cameo where he's like, oh, you're not going to let me fight, and that's it. Like, that's so, all you see of him.
That would be cool.
Spoiler a little bit for the Infinity War comic that's been out for years, so not really a spoiler. Mm-hmm. But one of the first things Thanos does when he gets the gauntlet is he arbitrarily kills one-third of everyone in the entire universe. Just one-third dead now because he's trying to press death. He's like, check this out, girl. And I think Daredevil is one of the casualties, and I think so is the Punisher. So I think that would be a funny way to, like, cameo.
Just kill the TV show.
They just die.
But how would you continue the TV show?
Well, they come back at the end.
Yeah, at the end of
it. When they win the war, they bring everyone back.
That's right.
It would be a cute little cameo to show, like, that they died.
That would be great.
It would be really funny. Actually, you're right. It'd be so anticlimactic, but really fucking funny, like, to the fuck you to the show. Especially because Disney's starting their own streaming thing. It'd be really funny if they're like, fuck all the Netflix shows. And at this point too, obviously everybody that's listening, Thanos is nobody in this movie.
Yeah.
He is literally a voice, I think. Or maybe he doesn't even talk.
I don't even think he talks.
It's that other guy that's talking. Yeah, the other guy's talking to him.
Yeah. Sandy Rivers.
The other, yeah.
And he turned... This was the movie where, like, okay, when I started watching the Marvel movies, every single character that we've touched at this point, I've known. Not read the comics.
Yeah.
Not like you, James. And when the trailer came up and Thanos, like, turns to the screen, I'm like, I don't know who that guy is.
Yeah.
I knew immediately.
A lot of people go up to being like, oh, who's Thanos? But it's also surprising, though, that a lot of people, myself included, still didn't really see what Marvel was doing. Because I saw that, and I'm like, oh, okay, Thanos is going to be the villain in Avengers 2. Like, this is what I just thought. Avengers 2 was going to be
them against Thanos.
Yeah, I didn't think that there'd be this massive long game, and he'd be the villain in 3.
Thanos is the natural. I mean, the minute you see Thanos, you have to assume they're heading towards the Infinity War storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But we also knew they were going to do stuff like Civil War. We knew they were going to do... you know, some of the other, like, I mean, no one thought Guardians of the Galaxy was going to come out at that point.
Yeah, because I remember talking to a friend of mine, and right after Avengers came out, and I was like, yeah, so I guess if Thanos in Avengers 2, like, yeah, that's really cool, and we're talking about it, and we're like, I guess he's got the Infinity Gauntlet. We're like, yeah. And then he was like, so, after Thanos, where did it go? Like, who's going to be a villain in Avengers 3? I'm like, Yeah, like, I was like, maybe Ultron, you know, and then...
Was it Galactus, the cloud?
Oh, yeah, well, they got the rights again.
Well, Galactus, too, isn't going to raise the stakes as high as Thanos. No, he's the end-all, be-all, so there's no...
To be more clear, I'm saying that I would use a very let-down character like the cloud.
You would use Galactus.
I mean, Galactus is, in his own right, extremely powerful.
Yeah.
But I mean, compared to the gauntlet, he's, you know,
and
he's nothing.
Also in Avengers, we have this, throwaway line where Tony Stark, after he's not dead, says that he thinks there's this great shawarma place down the road.
You see it earlier in the battle scene.
He doesn't know what it is, but he wants to try it. And, so at the end of the main credits before the scroll.
Yeah.
It's the Thanos scene.
Yeah.
Go through it, and then probably the best post-credit scene of all time, it's just them enjoying shawarma in this, like, destroyed restaurant that is still open.
Mm-hmm.
I love that... I don't know what movie it was. Maybe Snowpiercer?
I think it was Snowpiercer, yeah.
But they did makeup on... Very bad makeup on... Captain America to hide his beard, so he covers it with his face, which honestly...
unless you're really looking.
Yeah.
For Justice League, they should have just had Superman cover his face. It's like Austin Power, something's always blocking his face.
Or just be like Cesar Romero and they just put makeup over his mustache. But yeah, and I love that that after credits scene was originally not going to be in it, and then they came up with the idea for it, and they shot it. I think they shot it like a few weeks before the movie came out. But Chris Evans.
They were doing reshoots, and I guess they told him he was done when he wasn't done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
happens all the time.
Yeah.
Then they can grow a full beard.
He grew his beard for Snowpiercer, then they called him back for that.
Mm. I think that started the tradition too of really anticlimactic after credit scenes. Like people were kind of like, we used to expect like trailers or like teasers for the next movie, and now we just expect like funny little shorts.
Little quips.
Little quips.
I think after this one, you don't know, am I going to get a serious tease or am I going to get something stupid? And they're not necessarily bad when they're stupid. There's some really funny ones later down the road that I think are great.
Guardians.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
I'm thinking of Spider-Man specifically. Yeah, I thought that was like the better one. Our Stan Lee cameo is a underplayed, but well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's on the TV.
And he originally, because once again, we talked about, because originally he had a cameo earlier in the movie in a scene that got cut, and I guess they probably went back and reshot a cameo for that ending, but, because there's a scene that got cut at the beginning when Cap's, where Captain America's at a cafe with that one waitress that was, like, looking up at the end. And she's, like...
The one that has lines and is scared. The only one that gets any screen time.
Yeah, because it's earlier, like, he goes to that cafe and he's, like, sketching. And she's kind of flirting with him, but he's, like, not getting it. And she, like, walks away. And then Stan Lee's sitting at the table behind him. And Stan Lee's like, ask her out, you moron, or something like that. Yeah.
But I think that would have ruined the pacing, though. Like, I've seen that scene. It doesn't fit in... Avengers movie, it doesn't work.
Yeah. It would definitely ruin. It definitely ruins the pacing, which it's a funny scene, but Joss Whedon at least knew to scrap it.
Yeah, a lot of the Avengers' latest scenes are really kind of awkward. You see why they got. Because, like, the alternate opening is Maria Hill's telling this all, like, a flashback. She's talking to that council, and I think it would have been a pretty horrible
better ending. Choice.
Some choices that apparently they cut out, they just come back into play later. Like, they're like, we can reuse this later down the road. And
I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. It's like, this isn't the right time to say this now, but maybe later.
Okay, so we did... I might need some help here from you guys. We do this part where it's the MVP of the movie, which we think is the best character.
Mm.
We're not repeating characters, which takes Iron Man out of the game. It takes
Bruce Banner's
out of the game. It takes... I'm trying to remember.
Iron Man 2 is omitted, we couldn't
agree. Whiplash,
we couldn't
decide.
We did Stanley Tucci, but he's not coming back because he's dead. And who is Thor's character that we went with?
I think everyone settled on Odin. Because I was in Camp Loki, but I was...
Oh, well, then I'm definitely like in Camp Loki for the Avengers. Yeah.
So do you think Loki here is the most developed of Loki?
I think I mean, one, this is the movie that I fell in love with Loki, but the second reason is I think that he, at this point, is the most well-developed Marvel villain.
Yeah.
And I think continues to be so. So I think that, like, I mean, that, and especially because, I mean, he has the distinction of getting the first Avengers villain. And I think he stole every scene he was in. I mean, I couldn't look away, and not just for normal reasons. But no, like, I felt like his villain plan made sense for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the holes in his plan, you know, you see that they make sense. I thought he stole it, especially in a team up movie like this. You need a good villain to balance the team, especially when you're going to be up against six Avengers.
I think in this movie, I think Loki's better later down the road. I think he's good to be like a stand-in for them to build upon each other. Like, you don't need the great villain where it gets blamed for having all these flat villains down the road. Mm. But Loki's, like, from Thor to the little bit...
He's in Avengers.
Dark World.
He's...
No, that's after.
He's in
Thor, and he's in this.
Thor, and he's the Avengers, yeah. And then he's in Thor 2, and then
mm-hmm.
Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, even in Thor 2 and Ragnarok, I don't think that he's... Like, he's good in it, whatever, but, like, he's not... He's not the MVP of either of those movies. Where Loki, like, brought it.
See, I was gonna say Thor Dark World, he would be MVP, because that movie has so little in it.
Yeah.
Let's say that movie is close to Iron Man 2.
And on top of that, you find out a little bit more of the long game.
I would say he's the MVP of Thor the Dark World.
Yeah.
Even though we haven't gotten to
him. Who's your pick, James, or where would you kind of go?
It was tough for me. I was trying to think. Because I said Black Widow is my MVP for Iron Man 2, but also I think she's much better utilized in this than she is in Iron Man 2. Coulson, he was close for me. Or Loki. Like, it was between Coulson and Loki. Mm-hmm. But Loki, I know, is good. We have a few episodes until we get to Dark World, but I know Loki's going to be my MVP for Dark World.
Yeah. Now that you're saying it, like, more I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, he's definitely the best character in the Dark World. But, like, I still think he's the best character. He can have more than one movie.
He is, but if I'm
going to... We might pick an MVP of all the movies, and we could be like,
Loki is my personal MVP, but if I'm going to observe the rules, then I'll say Coulson might be the MVP of this movie.
I'm on Team Coulson. I would say Coulson overall, because without Coulson's death, they don't come together. They don't culminate the way that they would have.
I just feel like I like Coulson, but he's more used as a plot point than a character. I felt like I was learning and feeling a lot more for Black Widow in this movie than more than any other character. And I still don't even know what her background is. Like, they're like hinting about things that I don't fucking know what they're talking about. Russia and how they met and things.
See,
I disagree
because Coulson. I think they give you just enough on Natasha that you can put it together.
Coulson can still be the MVP character by being like more of he drives the team, but
he puts the team together.
He's also
basically
the audience, like he's the audience surrogate for this movie.
But also too, like you have his death. The person that reacts to Coulson in that moment is Thor, which is really fucking weird because he doesn't have any other real interactions with Coulson besides like the passing by a joke. But I would say Coulson's death is more sold by Nick Fury than Coulson, because Nick Fury is the character that kind of like pushes and uses the death, and he's the one that's sympathetic
that Tony was affected?
I thought Tony was more affected by Coulson's death
than anyone.
Than Thor. I mean, Thor takes it in stride because he's a warrior, but like Tony's clearly affected because he had just gotten to know Phil and not Agent.
He just doesn't outwardly show his emotions.
Right.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, because they're like, oh, is there anyone close to him? He's like, oh, you know, a cellist, I believe. You know, like, it shows that he took the time to care about Coulson.
On top of that, doesn't he mention him to Loki at some point?
Yeah, he's like,
he does. And there's somebody else. His name is Phil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, who's your character, Chuck? Is it Coulson then? Then it's...
He does have one.
Can we not put Galaga guy?
I do love his moment where he has that gun. He's like, we don't even know what it does yet. Mm-hmm. And he just blasts him through the wall, and he's like, oh, that's what it does.
I think Coulson was great. But he's, I guess to use another Whedon, he's the Penny from Dr. Horrible. It's a character that's, like, really nice. You're like, oh, they're okay, but they're built to die. I don't think he ever...
That is so obscure. I know what you're talking about, but I Dr. have never Horrible watched it. So, yeah.
A lot of people have seen it. It's great. I said, like, a Trump moment there. It's great. All my friends love it.
You'll be sad if you don't see it.
Here comes another superlative.
Yeah, it's the best movie. You'll have an erection while watching it.
It's
all the
greatest.
You've
got to see it. You just got to see it. It's the greatest.
It's the biggest audience of anything.
If you haven't seen it, sad. Just sad.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a lot harder because I'd probably agree. When you were, like, fighting, I think Loki is good in this, but if you have to think about the context of saving him for a movie that doesn't have a lot, that's the it's not disagreeing with you, it's just like, let's save him for a better time.
Yeah, let's save him for the dark. I mean, he does save that. I really like Thor's mom in the Dark World, but it has a lot to do with her relationship with Loki.
So
I was like, oh, that's tough. Because funeral, like, legitimately made me tear up a little.
I'll tell you what, it was very moving. That was the funeral I want in my life.
It was just so, you know, so cool. And you see that, like, later on, too, he has the same fighting style as she does, which lends me to my theory about him playing the long game with the staff. It's super awkward and clunky. He's clearly not, like, fighting that hard with it. He just doesn't care. Like, he's like, eh, you know, he gives it his kind of best attempt. But he's just like, he's kind of just screwing with these people. He just wants to get back to, you know, back to Asgard.
Yeah, but I mean, even though, like, I maybe enjoyed Black Widow the most, I'd say, like, Black Widow, the other agents, Coulson... All these little moments, like, there's almost not necessary. Even, like, the fucking waitress.
So
I was like, I like the goddamn waitress. See, she's reacting to everything nicely, and she's got that line in the news that I don't remember. But
yeah, my vote is for Galaga guy now.
We could just compromise MVP and say S.H.I.E.L.D. is the MVP of this movie.
That's a cheat.
Know,
it's Coulson.
Like,
it's definitely Coulson.
I mean, Nick Fury definitely, like, had probably some of the most to do in this movie.
Not the most valuable people. We're just being like, it's the Avengers.
I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made for Nick Fury.
I think he gets a bit more in Winter Soldier, though.
Yeah,
but he's not the MVP of Winter Soldier.
Oh, who is?
I'm gonna go Falcon.
That's gonna be a tough one, but we aren't there.
We definitely aren't.
Anthony Mackie's the MVP of everything. Yeah.
Well, sure, but I'm saying
Ant Man.
Anthony
Mackie. Yeah, Anthony Mackie.
Age of Ultron.
The Ant Man is Michael Pena's character.
It's T.I. Are you kidding me?
It's
that ant. That ant.
Yeah, I would still honestly fight for Loki for the Avengers, but I guess in the interest of saving him, then it has to be.
So, I mean, like, in the grand scheme of things up to this point, I feel like Iron Man was a high point. Didn't dip very low for the rest of them, but I think this is, like, the next high point.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in this movie, I think, has an interesting... For a team-up movie, what I think is really great about it, you don't need any context from the previous movies.
I really feel this is weird, but I would I don't know who this person is. I would love to sit somebody down to watch the Avengers that has no knowledge of the other movies or what these characters are.
Find a child.
Yeah, and be like, what do you think about these movies? Like, they can watch Batman or something, like other superheroes. They can like superhero movies, but I want them to not know these characters.
You'd have to find, like, a 3-year-old.
Or we need the Will Smith to invent the Men in Black pen that erases your mind.
Well, I mean, when I first saw Iron Man, wasn't really familiar with his comics. Didn't really know anything about him. I knew who the Hulk was, I mean, obviously. But, like, Marvel, it doesn't have as impressive a list of heroes, I think, as DC does.
Yeah.
At least I was always a DC kid growing up. I grew up with the cartoons.
Now, see, I wish I was sitting in on the Iron Man podcast because... Iron Man, for me, every morning I watched Iron Man cartoon.
Oh, yeah, I know the cartoon you're talking
about. I totally missed it.
But that's
about it in the next episode, Iron Man 3.
It's a testament to these movies where these characters weren't really household names. Like you said, right. DC, like, everyone knows most of DC characters, but then all of a sudden these movies come out and everyone, like, you see people wearing Captain America t-shirts now.
Yeah.
Or, like, Iron Man all of a sudden becomes everyone's favorite superhero. Yeah. Like, these, you know, I mean, we'll get to it as a few episodes, but Guardians of the Galaxy, no one knew who the fuck the Guardians of the Galaxy were. And now...
Well, even with Thor, everywhere. I was like, well, you know, I've always heard there's two versions of Thor, one that's actually Thor, and then one is guy that thinks he's Thor, Donald, whatever.
Well, like, I knew the Avengers, all of them, but, I mean, I grew up with Batman, I grew up with Superman, and sometimes you'd have, like, guests on it, like Daredevil and stuff like that. So I'm familiar with these other characters. Yeah. But even when I know that they all have to fight this bad guy, and I've known Infinity War but didn't read it at that point, Thanos was like, I know he's the bad guy, but that's all I fucking know. I don't know what he's about. And then some characters, like, when we get down to it, like Ant-Man, that's like a joke. They're like, fuck it. We're going with it. We're in our C-list superheroes now. And I think they're able to have a lot more fun with these characters.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get to more of Guardians, but like it's the same. Guardians are C-list, and they had a lot more fun with them because they could kind of
do whatever,
play around with them.
I was glad I went in pretty clean on the Marvel stuff.
It was still very exploratory when they got the Guardians, though.
Yeah,
like, well, it was just like Thor. You know, it's like, well, are they gonna grasp magic? Yeah, okay, now they grasp magic. Well, are they gonna grasp outer space?
Yeah, yes. I was surprised when they decided we're gonna go Marvel Cosmic before Marvel Magic. But they're two halves of the same really weird coin that Marvel decided to take on. And I mean, it's obviously it's paying off for them. Guardians was a huge freaking success. Yeah. So,
there we go. MVP Coulson for Avengers.
Go, Phil.
His first name is Agent.
We are doing Iron Man 3 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be an interesting episode because me and James definitely are on the same vibe for this movie. And I usually hear a lot of hate for it or a lot of people it's going over their heads a little bit.
Doesn't. Spoilers. I love it.
You guys should have Steve on.
Yeah.
I'm like mumbling, basically saying that. I'm like, we are whatever the popular opinion that everybody has that James has opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can't wait.
James is like, I love it.
I can't wait to discuss it. But spoilers, I love Iron Man 3.
Yeah. Our buddy Steve walked out of that movie just fuming.
So okay. We'll talk about Steve behind us.
Yeah, we'll talk about him.
I'm sure he'll listen to it. I'm sure.
Yeah. We're on Twitter at Cinema Demore. I'm at JJMorgan19.
Chuck Brown66.
Sinister Dick.
James Reinhardt.
And I'm at Wonder Knight.
We're on iTunes and Google Play Music too. Please subscribe and rate and review us. And thank you for listening. Do you have something cool that you want to say? Excelsior or whatever.
I do. Excelsior. And if you rate...
Spoiler alert.
Okay, if you leave us a review, and if your review is just Excelsior in all caps, I'll do something nice for you. I don't know what I'll do, but maybe if I have a Blu-ray Ultraviolet thing, I'll give you a code. But I just want that review on iTunes.
Shout out to specifically the Avengers episode, so we know.
Yeah, specifically the Avengers episode. I'll call you out on an episode if you do that. And I don't know what I'll do. I'm being very non-committal about this. I just want that review.
Shouldn't you offer like a kidney?
You know what? The rest of us will make sure James holds his.
I'll make sure he gets you a kidney.
It's not funny.
All you suffering souls out there, you need a free kidney. I know a guy.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.